This hour of the Jason Rand Show brought to you by PRMIseattle.com, primary residential mortgage. Lots of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? The homelessness crisis.
It's about time the city of Olympia decided, hey, let's go ahead and sweep this homeless encampment near the state capitol. It has nothing to do with the fact that lawmakers will be headed back soon. They just decided to sweep it at this point because, oh, yes, they waited until a homicide and three shootings were linked back to the encampment. You see, when we tell you the policies of Seattle have a tendency to spread, well, what's the policy in Seattle, generally speaking, when it comes to homeless encampments? We will clear it out right before or right after some kind of loss of life. They try to time it out where they get involved right before they reasonably think someone's going to die. Ultimately, they end up getting involved after someone dies. Sometimes it takes a few deaths, a few stabbings, a few overdoses, a few attempted rapes before they actually get involved. And that was the case here in Olympia. It's not for a lack of complaints coming from the neighbors who are impacted by this. They've been complaining about this for a while. Joel, for example, lives in Olympia. He lives nearby. He spoke with Woke 5. God, I do it. I keep doing it. King 5 News. And he said, hey, we have to deal with this all the time. Just recently, they found someone doing drugs in their front yard.
Our children learned a lot more vocabulary that morning when my wife was yelling out the window at the gentleman.
Yeah. Gentleman. He is not. Now, despite all those complaints, city decided to do nothing. In fact, I would argue they made it worse. What did they decide to do? They decided to make it more comfortable for the people who are living outside illegally near the state capitol. They installed toilets. They installed a hand washing station. They put in dumpsters, none of which actually did the job that they were supposed to do because I passed this encampment, what, a month and a half ago? It was a mess. It was an absolute mess. But then police were able to connect a homicide to this particular encampment. And so the city said, oh, okay, I guess we'll sweep. We'll do it. But the fact of the matter is they are partially responsible for that death. Not directly, but indirectly. Not as bad as the person who pulled the trigger. But they made it possible for whomever did and for the people involved to feel comfortable enough that they could go ahead and spend time shooting people, killing people, rather than work to get them in the system or in jail where they belong if they were actually breaking laws prior to the murder. Something tells me they might have been. The assistant city manager over in Olympia, his name is Keith Stolle. He says, yeah, okay, we decided to finally move.
In this particular instance, at this time, things have gotten to the point where it's safer to close the camp than to try and continue to support it.
It was always safer to close the encampment than continue to support it. That has always been the case. You can try to spin this all you want to Woke 5 News. It has always been the case. Now, they're saying, look, we don't have anywhere to put these people.
That's the unfortunate thing about where we are right now. There really isn't a place for people to go.
Then you are not looking hard enough. You can move them outside of Olympia. There are many organizations out there like Seattle's Union Gospel Mission who will help. There are organizations out there that will help. Hell, talk to one of the progressive activists who are against all the sweep. Just say, hey, can we put them up in your backyard? Oh, well, that's silly. You live in a basement of your mom's home. Can we put them down? You can get bunk beds. Oh, you already got bunk beds. Your brother is also unemployed and living at home. Okay. I mean, they do the three-bed thing. What is that called? Tri-beds?
I've never encountered.
Like in dorms or at hostels? I've never actually seen one in person.
Yeah, I haven't either.
Come on, let's be honest. I wouldn't be caught dead in one of those places.
You would be a middle bunk, right?
I would be I'm going to pay to get you out of this room if I was ever stuck in a hostel with strangers. That's what I am. Oh, they, of course, won't help anyway. And so instead, so I was like, well, you know, we're accepting donations.
Survival supplies are always welcome. Things like sleeping bags, warm clothing, shelter, tents, tarp.
Yeah, okay, we got it. More stuff to keep them living outside. More stuff to keep them living outside. Okay, got it. So they're going to sweep this encampment on Wednesday of next week. They said they've already begun outreach, trying to connect people with some sort of resource that could help. Now, that neighbor guy, Joel, makes an interesting point. You would think that he would just be happy that this problem is going to be gone, but he says it's not really gone.
It's going to be now something that is not right in front of you, but yet is still a huge challenge for our community.
Yeah, fair enough. He makes a very valid point. Absolutely. Because unless you're going to go after the actual root causes, and no, it's not white supremacy, then this is going to continue. The left loves talking about root causes. They don't want to solve them. They don't want to address them. They just want to signal their wokeness. That's all. Now, a lot of people are living out on the streets, are living out there because of a mental health issue that's not gone addressed, an addiction issue that has not gone addressed, or a life skills issue that has not gone addressed. Sometimes it's because they don't have any family members who they have connections with. Oftentimes that is as a result of an addiction. They don't have that support system in place, and they end up out on the streets. All of those reasons need to be addressed specifically. You can't just say, more housing. They weren't born homeless, so why are we talking about housing? Subsidized housing will help get these people off the streets, thus no longer homeless. Well, what if they're still dealing with the addiction? They'll just be homeless again. Inevitably, they will die of an overdose. We will get them the help that they need. No, you won't. You have systems in place right now that don't get them the help that they need. You just bring them in and you pretend that you're doing intensive work. No, you're not. There are groups that do intensive work. Generally speaking, the ones run by cities or counties, they're not doing that. Some do a good job. I look at Marysville a lot as an example. I look at Bellevue as an example. But those are the outliers. This isn't getting done in Olympia. Olympia's gotten a little bit better than where it was, sure. Puyallup, same way. Bellingham, the same way. A little bit better, but they're not where they need to be. We'll be here waiting. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? The sports ball.
So the sports ball team with the baseball, which is a small softball, softball not being a sport, so let's not talk about that.
It was an unnecessary transition.
I'm just throwing that in.
What a jab at softball. That's called a stray bullet, Jason.
No, I thought it was pretty direct. I don't know if that was a stray. I think I pointed the weapon right at it.
They're softball's just standing off to the side, minding their own business
about this?
Over there.
Golf isn't a sport either. It's a game. So baseball, there's a lockout.
Yes.
That means no one's allowed to do anything.
Correct. Players are locked out of facilities, and owners are not allowed to have interaction, or anybody's not allowed to have interaction with the players right now.
What about in DM? What if they slip into each other's DM?
That's illegal. They can't. They're not allowed to talk about baseball. I don't even think that they can talk about
baseball. Can they talk about softball
not
being a sport?
I don't think
so. So why are they doing this? Explain.
The owners...
And by the way, I know why they're doing it.
Of course you do.
I know all the intricacies of why they're doing it, but I promised Peyton that I would give him more airtime.
Billionaire owners are arguing with the millionaire baseball players right now that about... contract. The CBA expired. They have not come to an agreement on the new CBA. The negotiations of the new CBA lasted 7 minutes, and then both sides left. So obviously they weren't getting anywhere. Players want more money, more chunk of the revenue. They want the lower players to get paid higher so that they're not living in bad wages.
They're living slave wages. Yeah, we got it.
The owners want expanded playoffs.
Four-bedroom house in Medina.
I mean, but the minor leaguers are making like, you know,
yeah, well,
$1,500 a month.
Why don't you work a little bit harder, get a little bit better, and then you'll make more money.
So there's a whole lot of this going on. Teams don't want tanking. They want more incentives.
I love tanks. I think that would be pretty cool to have
on. Tanking and like losing as many games as you can so you can get the top pick in the draft the following year. So
it's a little bit of a loophole.
Players have been proposing.
They should give the top pick to the third lowest team.
So you have to be just at the right amount of losses.
Right?
To get
I think
it.
That actually is kind of an interesting point because that addresses the tanking.
Well, no.
Give it to the second worst or the third worst team.
I mean, the NBA.
Because they at least tried.
The NBA addresses tanking by doing a lottery. The worst record doesn't automatically get the top pick. It literally.
Yeah, but that's stupid because then the best record could get number one.
No, the lottery is the bottom 50, or the bottom 12 teams go
okay,
into
well,
a lottery.
Okay, well, then the 12th worst or the top, the first worst.
It's not even odds, though.
Shut up. I like my idea better. Wrap this up.
Your ideas
wrap
are
Wrap this
awesome.
up. Wrap this up.
So the lockout is probably...
Who's going to win?
the players ultimately because they can just stay out for as long as they want. And the owners...
Do they get paid?
No.
Then they can't stay out for as long as they want.
But the owners are going to be missing out on billions and billions of dollars if...
Are they billionaires already?
They are.
End of story. They have all the leverage if they want to use it.
The last time the lockout happened was the 94-95 season.
They missed the World Series then.
They started the season late, played 144-game season, were unlikely
Which
to see something.
Which is actually the better kind of season, if I'm being honest.
Which 154-game season is on the table
right now. 700 games in a season.
162.
There's like 9 innings that sometimes takes like 4.5 hours.
Shortened season could be on the table in the new CBA.
Only to see them lose, even though everyone was all like, Mariners are going to make it this time.
See, and we're all excited that the Mariners were going to go out and sign big names. They just did with Robbie Ray the other day.
Yes.
But now they can't make any sort of contract negotiations because of the lockout.
Boo.
I was
so
excited for this
offseason. Now he's going to become a professional softball player.
That would be fun.
I mean, it still isn't a sport. Might be a little bit more exciting.
You hate everything.
I hate stupid things. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text message. 1-800-465-8770. It is Thursday, which means I posted a Jason Rancho video update on all of our social media channels. It's a video brought to you by the Novak team, powered by Keller Williams. You can visit them online at meetthenovaks.com. On this week's episode of the Jason Rancho video update, we tackle the ridiculous position that Wazoo apparently is adopting, or at least amplifying, that farmers markets are racist. Yeah, okay, yeah, we got it. So if you want to check that out, you can go to any of our social media channels, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, now that I'm realizing I forgot to upload them today. So you can go to the blog at KTTH.
It's on Twitter.
Is it on Twitter?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I did post it on Twitter.
You tweeted
my Twitter.
I don't think that you put it on Instagram.
Yeah, I forgot to put it on Instagram. I'll do that during the break.
Stand by, and it'll be on Instagram
soon.
It'll
be there soon. Or just go directly to KTTH.com, click on the blog, and I've got the video from our YouTube channel embedded. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Let's get political.
I didn't really want to talk about the Lauren Boebert controversy. She is technically a friend of the show in that she's been on the show multiple times. And I think I teased yesterday that I was going to say how I'm accidentally and then purposefully humiliated her comms director. And I'll do that at the end of this segment. But Lauren Boebert is a congresswoman, Republican firebrand from the state of Colorado. She is quite edgy, right? She says things that are politically incorrect. I kind of like her because everyone on the left hates her. I don't know why that always just sort of pushes me into liking someone when people don't like them.
Yeah, you like things, a lot of things like that.
That's just my personality.
I'm a hipster.
It's definitely not hipster. She's just very nice to me, right? She's just a nice congresswoman when we've met, and we've met a few times now at various events. So she made an indisputably mean-spirited and racist comment. She did. She made it about Ilhan Omar not once, but twice.
The other night on the House floor was not my first Jihad Squad moment.
Not that.
So I was getting into an elevator with one of my staffers. And
probably the one I made fun of, but we'll get to that in a second.
He and I we're leaving the Capitol, we're going back to my office, and we get in the elevator, and I see a Capitol police officer running hurriedly to the elevator. I see fret all over his face, and he's reaching, and I'm like, what? I can't, the door's shutting, like, I can't open it. Like, what's happening? I look to my left, and there she is, Ilhan Omar.
Whoops.
And I said, well, she doesn't have a backpack. We should be fine.
Okay. So that's very clearly wrong. It's also mean. It might be funny if we wanted to lean into that kind of humor. But that's very clearly mean-spirited. And certainly it's rude. It clearly leans into racist tropes. I think it's a little bit different with Ilhan Omar because she's bringing it into the Jihad Squad. Fine. Whatever it is, even if you want to call it satire, it's wrong. It's inappropriate. You don't do that about your colleague. I mean, if it was AOC, you could do it, but you don't do it about your colleagues. So I wasn't going to talk about this because, you know, people on the left do their same version of this, right? But then Hakeem Jeffries, the congressman on the left, I think he's from New York. Pretty sure he's from New York. He said that comment, that joke, mean-spirited as it was, endangers the lives of his Democratic colleagues.
I think there are active discussions underway to make sure that Lauren Boebert is held accountable.
Held accountable. Oh, my gosh.
Particularly given the likelihood that we may not see any accountability coming from the four-ring malignant circus on the other side of the aisle.
The Four Ring Malignant Circus. Okay. Kind of sounds like you're diving into the same sort of divisive insults that she was. Okay, continue.
But hope springs eternal.
Oh, does it?
And we'll see what emerges over the next day or two. At the same time, we're continuing to have discussions, leadership, House Democratic Caucus, to make sure that we support our colleague.
Uh-huh. In her time of need.
Because clearly, this type of dangerous rhetoric is endangering Ilhan Omar. And it endangers other members of this Congress. And words matter. We saw the consequences of dangerous rhetoric on January 6th.
We also saw it a few years earlier with Steve Scalise, who was almost shot to death by a Bernie Sanders supporter. But you know, we forget that. We choose not to talk about that, right, Congressman? So now I have to talk about this because this is an absolutely absurd comment. First of all, this was a video that was taken at a private event, so it's not like she was even putting it out there. But be that as may, even if she made this comment on the House floor, the specific one, she's obviously used the Jihad Squad before, but to claim that that kind of language, that kind of rhetoric, puts Ilhan Omar's life in danger, tell me what the comment that was made this week by Maxine Waters does.
We know that they're evil. We know that they lie. We know that they don't give a darn about facts. And so we've got to overcome that with the truth.
They're evil? I mean, that's a strong word, Congressman. Evil.
Republicans are evil, right? They're evil. Let's let her finish.
Worse than that.
Worse than evil. What's worse than evil?
Evil. When you see the kind of attacks that you have talked about already, that's constantly being made by them, that's evil. And I want you to know, I'm under attack also. Mm-hmm. They tried to censure me. And of course, we beat them back with our slight majority that we have. And even, you know, Marjorie Taylor Greene, I believe, has something up to expel me from the Congress of the United States. Can you imagine people with this kind of attitude and these kinds?
Just real quick, didn't you all strip her of, because of, okay, never mind.
Of actions and this kind of racism they display all the time, talking about expelling me or anybody else from Congress when in fact they shouldn't even be there.
So when you call someone worse than evil and they're racist and they're dangerous, does that endanger the lives of Republicans? Like Steve Scalise, who was shot almost to death? At all or no? When you guys do it, it's cool. Thumbs up. Because you're right. When Boebert does it or any other Republican does it, it's wrong. It's evil. It endangers lives. How about this? Both sides can stop. Both sides can stop with this disturbing rhetoric. It's called disturbing. I don't think anyone's going to attack a Republican because of what Maxine Waters said. Nor do I think anyone's going to attack Ilhan Omar or other members of Congress because of what Lauren Boebert said. It's just mean-spirited and unnecessary. But only one side is taking that high horse position. Now I can say how I embarrassed Lauren Boebert's comms guy, who's a very nice guy.
Thankful. I'm so ready for this part.
He showed up to, it was a Turning Point USA event I was at, the last one in...
Arizona? Florida.
No, Florida, in Orlando, right, I think. And he showed up to book Lauren Boebert on the show, and we were always happy to have her. And he was wearing his U.S. men's national team shirt for the U.S. men's national soccer team. And I was a little bit surprised. I was like, oh, you're a soccer fan. And it happened to be that there was a game that night. Can't remember what it was. So I said, who do you like tonight? And he was like, what do you mean? Like, the game. He goes, what game? The soccer game. The match. And he clearly had no clue what I was talking about. Who was he with at the time? Not Lauren Boebert, but I'm pretty sure his girlfriend. And as soon as I sense any sort of blood in the water, I just does. So I was like, do you even know anyone who's on the team? Do you have any idea of anyone who's on the team? He couldn't name a single person. I go, do you like, what do you think about Christian Roldan, who's a sounder who's on the team? Nothing. Pulisic, he had no clue. He just wore the shirt because it said USA.
Why would you torch him like that? We need more growth for the national team like that.
So hard. And I said in front of his girlfriend, I will never let you live this down. Every single time I see you now, I'm going to ask you about U.S. men's national soccer. And he looked a combination of embarrassed and pissed.
That was so uncalled for. I'd be pissed too.
Next time I saw him, I go, who's your favorite soccer player? But his girlfriend wasn't there, so I didn't lean in.
He's going to call you Jason Ranch to all of his friends.
It's fine. Do it. The last person who did that elevated my career quite well. It's true. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text. Don't forget, every Thursday I post a video online, Jason Ranch Show Video Update. It's brought to you by the Novak team, powered by Keller Williams. Visit them online at meetthenovaks.com.
Yelm, Tacoma, Bremerton, Bothell.
This is the Big Local on the Jason Ranch Show.
Redmond, Sumner, Kent.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Hey, look at that. 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. That means it's time for the Big Local, brought to you by Alpine Specialty Cleaning at alpineclean.com. This is the part of the show where we completely ignore stories coming out of Seattle. And instead, we focus all of our attention on the communities you live in, the communities you care about most. And we start in Mukilteo, and we're going to head over to Bothell. There have been a weird rash of threats causing schools some significant problems. In the case of the Mukilteo School District story, a 14-year-old was arrested because of posting social media threats. Specific threats. Specific threat of school shootings. Happened last night. Kid was arrested last night. And there were threats against three schools.
Deputies responded to a 911 call to report a social media post that indicated there would be a shooting at Voyager Middle School, Explorer Middle School, and Mariner High School.
And we don't really have any more details than that. That was Sheriff's Deputy Courtney O'Keefe from Snohomish County Sheriff's Office. But detectives found the source of the post and made an arrest without any incident. Kid gets booked on 6 felony charges, but I mean, no youth jail. Unless the kid is white, then we're all for the youth jail, right? Now, classes were held as normal today. There was police present on the three campuses just in case, but all at the end of the day ended without any incident. That's good news. Now, over at Bothell High School, they went all online today. They canceled their in-person learning because of a threat of violence that I believe was posted on a bathroom wall. A stall wall. Bothell PD don't have a suspect yet. They're investigating, or they might have a suspect. It hasn't been made publicly yet. So they decided to cancel school for the day. And it's kind of interesting that these things, number one, don't happen more often. The errant threat. There are lots of people who are children who are using social media who don't quite realize what it is they're doing. And in some cases, sometimes, they end up thinking, hey, I'll just get school canceled with this meaningless threat. They don't realize how serious it is. And in other cases, it's legitimately serious. In other cases, it's legitimately serious. How are you supposed to know? How are these schools supposed to know? In this case, you have an instance in which school continued because presumably they caught the 14-year-old kid. On the other hand, you had a school that was canceled because they didn't catch the person. So we know how this all is going to end, generally speaking, when this sort of stuff happens. But I just keep thinking about how kids do stupid things on purpose, not really thinking, goofing off, or at least they think they're goofing off. And then the result could be a total lockdown, fear from parents. This obviously comes after the Michigan school shooting. So I don't know how schools are supposed to handle this. I'm just still shocked that more kids aren't acting out this way. In a lot of ways, I'm glad that they've kind of, at least to a point, figured out the stuff you do online can, in fact, get back to you and get you in trouble. And then, of course, I always wonder, what kind of threats are they? In the case of the Mukilteo kid, you know, these were direct targeted threats. But in the case of the Bothell school, they don't tell you what the actual threat was. I'm wondering if it was more direct or less direct. Was it, I hate this place, I wish it would explode, like stuff like that, something that a kid might say. And I wonder that out loud because the superintendent of the district, North Shore, ended up putting out a statement that basically said, hey, kid who did this, whoever you are, if this was your attempt to ask for some kind of help, if this was your way of asking for help, please know that there are ways that you can get that kind of help without having to threaten anyone or school. That we have counselors, we have school staff ready to give you some support, which is a very appropriate way to handle someone if you don't think the threat is true, right, or as real as it could be, but really is just a cry for help. This is a, I was kind of thrown by the nature of this letter from the superintendent. I thought it was actually quite compassionate. Meanwhile, we go to another school, another district over in Enumclaw, where the Enumclaw PD are doing an investigation into whether or not there was a possible hate crime at a school board meeting. Two people on Zoom interrupted a school board meeting with racial slurs. I don't know what the crime is. That's not a crime. It's disturbing. It's racist. But using a racial slur, even more than once, generally speaking, is not a crime. It could become a crime or a part of a crime, depending on the context. But in this case, I don't know what the crime is. Certainly not a hate crime. It's hateful. It's racist. In this case, you got two people, two adults, who interrupted and they kept using an unidentified racial slur. I'm assuming it was the N-word because, according to King 5 News, they say it had to do with George Floyd. So if they're using a racial slur with a black person, that's my assumption. Apparently, one displayed a photo of George Floyd while using the racial slur. One of the people appeared to be an elderly white male.
This impacts not just the people that were in attendance of the meeting, but impacts our entire community.
I don't know if it impacts the entire community. Most of the community, even though it was on Woke 5 News, probably don't know that this happened. I don't know how much it impacts the people who are at the meeting. It was a hybrid. Some of them were online. Some of them were in person. Again, it's jolting. It's rude. You don't want to see this kind of hatred on display. That's Commander Mike Gradden. And he's saying, hey, everybody, we're going to look into this, but we do need you to be a little bit patient.
It certainly takes a lot of time. We're really asking for the public's understanding that this requires diligence. It requires a great amount of time and effort on the part of our detectives. But it's something that they're not going to stop. And they're going to continue to dig and dig.
I mean, okay, that seems like, with respect, a waste of time. You're not putting this person in jail because they used the N-word or any other slur. Did they hack into the meeting? It was a public meeting. Now, he's saying because there were two people involved, they believe that this was quote-unquote coordinated. Okay, maybe. And so now the school district said they will force people who want to address the board, they have to do it in person. They can't do it online anymore. What if this was their way of getting all the stuff to be in person instead of online? Isn't that weird that that was kind of like the first place I went?
Did they think that was like, did they know that was the punishment?
I don't know. I'm just saying, you know, here's, if you've got a hybrid scenario, which means you're allowing some online and some in person, it seems to me that it's reasonable to say, hey, I bet you we can do something online that would get them to just shut up the online access, right?
I don't know.
They're still racist, but what if they're racist who want it to be in person?
With a bigger goal in mind?
Yeah. Like, okay, let's come up with a plan here. I am a racist. Let me just lean into that.
And then we'll have in-person meetings again.
We'll have in-person meetings, which benefits everyone. Downside, I'm going to have to be around black people, I guess. Is that what they're thinking, these degenerates? Okay. Finally, Everett police are committing additional resources into arresting porch pirates because everyone just bought their goods online and they're having packages sent for Christmas and for Hanukkah and for New Year's. I don't know. Do you give gifts on New Year's? Do you give cards on New Year's?
No, you don't give gifts on New Year's.
Okay, well, I'm taking away my gifts.
Were you going to give me a gift?
I was. Not anymore.
For New Year's? Well, then, yeah, everyone totally gives gifts on New Year's.
No, too late.
They're usually like really, really nice and expensive.
Part of the plan, it's called Package Theft Operation, according to Cairo 7 TV. Property crimes detectives have enlisted the aid of their anti-crime team, the Bicycle Unit, Criminal Intelligence Unit, geez, and crime analysts. They're working with local delivery companies and package theft victims to identify areas of high theft. But my favorite part is they're deploying bait packages with tracking devices. So they're just putting out these fake packages that are there to be stolen so you can then track the GPS and then make the arrest.
I know when they say, like, GPS devices and stuff, they're
talking about a tile.
See,
I'm
thinking,
an Apple,
like,
tile or
it's
whatever.
It's the Apple tag, the Air tag or whatever, and they just throw it into the box.
Oddly enough, this has been delayed because they bought 10 of them on Amazon for the Black Friday deal, but the package was stolen.
Oh,
well, and before you can turn it on.
Set it up, huh?
Speaking of gifts, you know what time of year it is?
Yeah, it's Hanukkah right now.
Yeah, what else? Christmas is coming up, but what about the show? What do we do every year around this time?
The Jason Rantz gift giving extravaganza.
Why do we do that?
So that you can rub it in all the other producers' face who left you, that you are a great host and love to give great gifts.
Yeah. People who leave me, they feel awful about leaving because I give the best gifts. I'm the best producer, gift giver in the world.
It really pays off after all the staple throwing, you know, for
100%.
11 months out of the year.
And you would think it's because I feel guilty about the abuse that you endure. It's not. It's
no, not at all.
To abuse, ironically, the other producers who look in awe. What did I get you last year?
Last year, you got me the sneakers.
Wait. What kind of sneakers?
Nike.
That's not what I mean.
They're very expensive.
Very expensive sneakers.
They're very cool.
Very expensive. Yes. I've never seen you actually wear them. But they're very expensive.
Because they're summertime sneakers.
Okay. I mean,
wear them in the summer.
It's $350 sneakers.
Do you
what
really
else?
Think I can wear the fits for that to work? I can't. Because I wear sweats.
Show me
I wear
that
like
I
a jogger
bought
sweat.
You something very thoughtful.
You
else?
Got me a very nice bottle of rum that was delicious. You got me a very cool hat, the melon hat, and the travel case that goes with it. You got
also
me
really expensive.
Yes, you got me the DVD of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. That was like a director's package, which I'm pretty sure they probably just sent you from the studio.
Yeah, that one I didn't buy. But, I mean, it's worth something.
You got me an Xbox game, although that might have been 2 years ago.
Yeah, I don't remember. Bottom line, I spent a lot of money.
I did
myself this year.
This year you did?
Yep. Because there are a lot of ex-producers who happen to be coming back into the office lately. And so we're going to do that next week. And not to put any pressure on you, but that means the gift you get me better be worth...
I mean, you know my paychecks.
Yeah, so
they're
let's do at least a whole... Let's do four paychecks worth. You know how you're supposed to do like four paychecks worth for a wedding ring?
Yeah.
Well, for this, that goes to at least, what, 150, something like that? That's how much you should be spending on me.
You throw away all my gifts that I give you anyway.
Yeah, it's just
you're
the power
hardest
that I
person
have.
To ever buy a gift for because you can afford. You make $285 million a year.
Yeah,
you can buy everything that you want.
Yeah,
I mean, unless I get you like the Blue Origin trip to the moon, which I don't even think you would want.
That's stupid.
You would put me on it and say, "Hope you don't crash."
What I say? Hope you don't. 1-800-465-8770. If you want to send me a text. Welcome back to the Jason Rantz Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. Really do appreciate it. Again, don't forget the weekly Jason Rantz Show video update brought to you by the Novak team. It's powered by Keller Williams. You can visit them online at meetthenovaks.com. It's posted on all of our social media channels. Hope you'll check it out. USA Today did a dive into the views of residents on public safety in two cities. They've been going and comparing city to city via polling for the last, I believe, year. This time they chose Oklahoma City and Louisville. And they did this for two specific reasons. Number one, Louisville is sort of the center of some BLM activism because of the Breonna Taylor case. And number two, in Oklahoma City, it's kind of the opposite, where the focus has been on the support of police, despite the fact that, as USA Today points out, the police there have a very high, in fact, the highest in the country, rate of use of force against Black people. Now, it doesn't give you the context of any of that, but you're supposed to get the takeaway of they're racist. Why would they support police there? So they asked a series of questions to gauge the residents' views of public safety and defund police and that kind of activism. And the question then became, does the activism on either side actually match the results in the polling? Meaning in Oklahoma City, when you poll people, do you get past the activist groups who support police? And in Louisville, do you get polling that indicates something beyond the activism that's anti-police? And interesting results. In this poll, it was done by USA Today with Suffolk University's CityView poll. Both cities had the exact same outcome. Percentage is a little bit different per city, but both cities had the same outcome. They prioritized, the people who live there prioritized public safety well above so-called law enforcement reform, like higher than you can imagine. Let's put it that way. You have Oklahoma City supporting cops because it supports cops. That's why the poll shows them overwhelmingly saying we support police. We support public safety. Louisville activists who attack police all the time, they're unpopular. And yet, when you think about this, what's the one issue that gets the most coverage, the most play, the most push overall in the media? Fox News, because, and I say this as someone who talks about this every single week on the Faulkner Focus and on other shows, we are the outliers in talking about the support of police and the dangers of the anti-police movement. We are the outliers. CNN, MSNBC, they lean into amplifying the activist perspective that hates the cops, and they do PR work for them, pretend that none of the issues that we're currently facing in the surge of violence has anything to do with their policies. Interesting how that works, right? As some of the to be clear, the polling is closer in Louisville than it is in Oklahoma City, but the stances are still clear. By a 53-31% margin, Louisville residents said the marches had hurt the community, not helped it. And what's particularly interesting, on assessments of the police, Latinos are way more likely to align with the views of white people who support cops than black people who don't, or at least not in those high number. Latinos rated the police more favorably and public safety as a more dominant concern than African Americans did. In Louisville, Latinos had an even more positive view of the police than whites did, by nearly 2-1, a 61% to 32% range. They said police use force only when necessary. In Oklahoma City, where nearly 1 in 5 residents are Hispanic, they said by 57% to 25% that police officers' use of force was appropriate. Latinos love cops, at least in these two cities. But what are we seeing across the country? What did we see with President Trump's reelection? He did particularly well with Latinos, even though we were told that he hates Latinos. He viewed all Mexicans as rapists, even though that's not quite what he said. It's not even the intent of what he said. We've seen an increase in Hispanic voters, Latino voters, going towards Republicans. And even though it didn't help Trump enough to get him a victory, it helped a lot of Republicans get victory. You just saw recently in Texas, I think it was San Antonio, where a Republican Latino was put into office, and he was buoyed by Latino votes. This has political implications. There's this assumption that if you're a person of color, you hate cops. That's what the Democrats want you to believe, some Democrats, and that's what some media outlets want you to believe. We know over and over and over again that that has been proven to be false. There's this push to just demonize cops, and they say, hey, we got black people to hate cops. Let's do our best to get Latinos to hate cops, and then soon Asians to hate cops. It's not working. It's not working. And it's working less and less with the black population because, turns out, black communities actually want cops in their neighborhoods to protect them from criminals. They might want some reforms, okay, depends on where you live. But they are supportive of cops, and then they look, hey, look what the defund movement did. It took away our officers, and the crime in our communities is skyrocketing. Liberals don't care about that. They just stick with some condescending opinions.